I'm so interested. What is it exactly that you do as an Earth system scientist? What does that role mean?
Okay, we try to study how the Earth system operates, and we better define, I guess, what the Earth system is. It's the planetary environment that allows us to prosper, as you said. So it has to do with the oceans, the atmosphere, the land, the ice, but very importantly, how all these processes change and interact with each other. The point being that when we look at this in a totality, it has the properties of a single system. So we use the term Earth system in the singular, not the plural. This is a relatively new field, in about the last 20 or 25 years it's developed. And it's very important because, as you said, when we look in the past in Earth, we can actually identify states of this system which are colder or hotter than the state we're in now. And we can then assess how humans are changing the state of the entire system, not just parts of it.
Wow. And this all feeds into, then, I'm assuming, systems thinking. Can you explain exactly what systems thinking is?
Yeah, systems thinking is that rather than simple cause-effect logic, you have systems that have well-defined, stable states. And sometimes those states can be very robust or very stable, and you can push the system and it comes back to the same state. But if you push it a bit too far, it'll flip. When you cross the so-called tipping point, it'll flip. And tipping points are really quite common in societies and in nature. A good, really good example is that if you go out on a kayak, out on a lake, and you can tip that kayak a bit, and it comes right back to a stable state, and you can tip it a bit more, and it comes back to a stable state. But if you just tip it that wee bit more, it then just goes over
and puts you
underwater.
In the water.
So there isn't an intermediate state where you're partway, where you're sort of sideways. It's either you're stable or you're upside down.
Okay.
That's a simple example, but there are a lot of examples in nature, too, where things are not linear. They don't just respond to the level of pushing or forcing. You hit a critical point and it flips.
Wow. I think that that's a fantastic way of thinking of it. I'd not ever thought of it before, and honestly, I've not ever been able to understand it before. So that's fantastic. How does the Anthropocene play into all of this? Because that's something that I've been really trying to wrap my head around lately.
Yeah, and as you said in the introduction, the Earth system has been in a relatively stable state for about 12,000 years now.
Yeah.
And the geologists call it the Holocene. And as far as we can see, you can push that state a bit here and there, and it seems to be reasonably stable. But if you push it too far, we think that feedbacks within the Earth system are going to push the state to a new condition, push the system to a new condition or a new state, regardless of what we try to do once we cross the critical threshold. So the idea is that the Anthropocene is already a new geological epoch and a new state of the Earth system, because we believe we've actually left the Holocene for good. And the question is, where's the system going to go? And in this recent work that we've just published, we say that out of the many options, you can really define two. One is that we become much better at becoming stewards of the Earth system, and we stabilize it at a state that's hotter and less biodiversity than the Holocene, but we may be able to stabilize it there. But if we don't, and if we cross a critical threshold, planetary threshold, we're going to go to a much hotter state of the Earth system, regardless of what we try to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's all about kind of controlling what we're doing in terms of man-made climate change and the environmental impacts that we're having on the Earth to make sure that we don't hit that tipping point and tip our kayaks and we all end up in the water and in a bit of trouble.
Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about.
And, okay.
And now we're trying to work out where that critical point might lie. Mm. In other words, how far can you push the kayak, the Earth kayak, before it actually flips?
That must be an incredibly hard thing to calculate, though.
It is very hard. You've got to assess it in a whole number of ways. It's not a simple calculation. You've got to look at all the feedback, what we call feedback mechanisms that operate in the Earth system. You've got to look at past conditions of the Earth, which give you insights to what the Earth can actually do. Because as we can see in the geological record, the Earth has been much colder than it is today. It's been much hotter than it is today. And we try to work out what were the parameters, what were the conditions back then, and what might have moved the Earth from one state to another. So there's an awful lot of science that gets involved in trying to assess where that might lie. The best thing we can say now is we think a planetary threshold could lie between a 2 and 4 degree temperature rise. We can't rule out that it could be as low as 1.5, but we're pretty certain that by the time you hit a 4 degree temperature rise, you're going to trigger a lot of these feedbacks that we're looking at.
Is it possible that we've already reached the trigger point?
Probably not. I wouldn't totally rule it out. You can start to see some of these processes at work. I'll give you a few examples. One is the summer sea ice over the Arctic Ocean is diminishing year by year at a fairly rapid rate. Now, how does this feedback work? Well, during the summertime up there, that's when the sun is actually over the North Pole. If you have ice over that, that reflects most of the sunlight, which keeps that northern region much cooler. But as that ice melts back, it uncovers much darker ocean water. That absorbs much more sunlight. It enhances the warming, which then causes the ice to melt back even further. So you see the feedback mechanism working here. Mm. A couple other ones that are starting to happen. One is the big northern forest. We call them the boreal forest, the one in Siberia and Canada. They're starting to burn more often. And when they burn more often, of course, they release more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, which is a greenhouse gas. That's a feedback mechanism. But then that also, again, contributes to warming the planet. And as the planet warms, those forests become even more susceptible to burning, and there you get another reinforcing feedback loop. So we've identified about 8 or 10 of these feedback loops now that we're looking at, and we're trying to assess where do those feedback loops really start being activated. Some of them, yes, indeed, could be activated at 1 and 1.5. But the point is to get the whole Earth to move into another state, you've got to get a domino effect where the feedback affects the individual ones, sort of tip each other over in like a row of dominoes. Mm. And that's the critical point. And we don't know where that point lies. We don't think it lies at 1 degree. There is a possibility, I think, that the lower end may be 1.5 or so. But as you go up to 2 and 3, the risk that you're going to get that domino effect gets much greater.
Mm. So is this what you'll all be discussing during this public forum that you'll be attending in Sydney?
Well, it's one aspect of what we'll be discussing. It's not the whole thing. But we'll be discussing also the human side of things, because the ultimate drivers of this, of course, are human activities through primarily the burning of fossil fuels. That's changing the fundamental energy balance, and that's really the ultimate driver behind a lot of these feedbacks I've just been talking about. But we're also doing other things. We're greatly simplifying the biosphere. We're driving the Earth toward its sixth great extinction event. And, of course, even within the human sphere, and we humans, we evolved into this system. We're part of the Earth system. We also see a lot of cracks and stresses now in our social and economic systems. So you have to look at the entire Earth system, including us humans. So I'll try to broaden my discourse to talk a little bit more fundamentally about how we've come into the Anthropocene, how have humans driven this, where do we stand today, what are the risks, what are the big trends in societies that could be helping us stabilize the system, but what are the big trends that are in societies that are pushing us even further toward this possible planetary tipping point.
Professor Stefan, this is honestly so fascinating to me. I've learned so much in the last 8 minutes, more than I have in a really, really long time. Unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you so, so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.